Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shade. Welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shade, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And it looks like, indeed, this is the year that we made freedom a reality. But we need to follow it through. Because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ, we need to follow this through. And there was such an outpouring of prayer the day before election. Virtually everybody I know, cross denominations, was praying. Catholic and Protestant alike, across this country praying. And then look what happened on election day. We need to keep praying for this country. We need to keep praying for our leaders. And we need to keep praying that we will keep the Lord at the center of our lives so he can continue to be at the center of our country. That's what it means, I think, in Jeremiah 6:16, to stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. It's a really simple formula. We just need to do it. Every generation. And I think what we are actually seeing right now might be a rebirth of freedom. And there are some people, unfortunately, who may indeed not want freedom. They may actually want to see chaos. They may want to see death and destruction because they lost in the election. Now, I find it interesting that if the right loses an election, there are protests, civil organizing at the local level with the Tea Party, but when the left loses an election, and you can't tell me that the people at the top don't know who's doing this. The emails that were leaked in regards to Hillary Clinton very clearly show there is a top-down coordination on a lot of this stuff. And on the left, they will loot, burn cars, burn buildings, get people injured. How come the mainstream media... never mind. I answered my own question. And that is why I believe that this election was so monumental, because everything was against conservatives. Everything was against Donald Trump. And the people just showed up and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We are not going to do that anymore. And they basically admitted they had absolutely no clue, and they are completely out of touch with the American people. Now, this is why guys like Sean Vestal and others at the Socialist Review and the Inslander don't understand what's happened. They don't understand Patriot Radio. They don't understand how any Americans could believe in life and liberty and property and the ability to defend the same. How somebody could possibly believe it. It's old and antiquated. And that's how out of touch they are, because most Americans believe this. We are still in a majority. We're still in a majority. We just need to show up. And you know something that's interesting? We didn't actually fully show up in this election. There were still people that didn't show up at the polls to vote. Even here in Spokane County, you have a quarter of the people registered to vote that don't show up. You know, that makes a huge difference. And look what happens when we do show up. Despite all of the attempted fraud that was documented, despite all of the tampering and messing around with elections around the country that happened, despite all of that, we still won because it was overwhelming. And remember I said that this election was about globalism versus nationalism. And this brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing in the international front. I want to read this quote for you Because President Obama went to Greece, okay? And he warned today that Americans and people around the world, quote, are going to have to guard against a rise in a crude sort of nationalism or ethnic identity or tribalism taking root among the populist movements that are gaining currency around the world. Understand what he just said. He is rebuking the American people for electing Donald Trump, number one. And number two, he's saying that nationalism is a bad thing, that being an American, and this is key, that being an American is a bad thing, that you need to be a citizen of the world, and you need to worry about what's happening in all of the other parts of the world and become part of the global community. Give me a break. Give me a break. Nationalism, Americanism, is what has made us great, believing in the ideals that have made this country great, believing that the founding fathers meant what they said when they said, no king but Jesus. That's what made us great. And here he just can't keep his mouth shut. He's got to mock America abroad in front of another head of state, the Greek prime minister, saying that. And it's not, look, as Christians, we've got to care about everybody in the world. But you know how we've done that? We've done that because in America, we have been successful. We have been the greatest force for good in the history of the world. We've been the largest exporter of missionaries and funds for missions in the history of the world. So if America is strong and vibrant, and we get government the heck out of the way of our small businesses so they can continue to create jobs, we are going to be worried about the rest of the world because we are generous and we are giving to the rest of the world. He's just got it completely backwards. He thinks it has to be top down because you're too stupid. And you know what? I think people were so sick and tired, especially in the rural areas of America, that have just felt like they've been under, well, it really has been a war on rural America. They've been under the gun for a long time. They just said, enough of that. You think we're stupid? And that really is the insidious nature of the mainstream media and the entire socialist movement. They think they know better than me and you. But what's made America great is actually trusting in the ingenuity and the generosity and the honesty and integrity of average everyday Americans. And the mainstream media completely missed this. They just completely missed it. And they still don't seem to get it. In fact, I'm going to go through a bunch of these things in the news right now, but you're going to understand what I'm talking about. They just don't get it because I'm going to talk about a bunch of the different parts of the news that are really dramatic that are already unfolding as a result of this election and why that is so important. This is why 3 years ago I said we need to be the media, because we get it as the people. We get it. The farmers and ranchers and loggers listening to this radio show, the manufacturers and the car mechanics, the doctors and the lawyers, the teachers, all those that love freedom, we get it. We get it. So keep this kind of filter in mind as I go through the rest of the news right now. Because also on the national front, you have the Chinese yuan at the lowest level in 8 years. So the Chinese currency, lowest level in 8 years. And what that means is that the Chinese realize that there's going to be competition now in manufacturing. That's one of the reasons on election night that the futures markets tanked. The Nikkei index for Japan and the Hang Seng for China tanked because they know that there's now going to be competition in manufacturing. So that brings us to the next thing, which is on the national front, and that is that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is officially dead. Now, interesting that Chuck Schumer on the Democrat side said it was dead, and yet on the Republican side, somebody came out and said, no, wait, it's still alive. Well, Chuck Schumer being one of the highest-ranking Democrats saying that TPP is dead, it's dead. I mean, this thing is dead. They need Democrat votes to pass it. And who's going to go against what just happened in that election? Because they'll be targeted in 2 years in Congress for primary opponents if they don't kill the TPP. And they know it. I mean, there are congressional representatives all over this country that are watching this saying, I'm not going to go against it. I'm saying TPP's dead too. Because if I go against it, I'm going to have a primary opponent. And if they don't, they're as tone deaf as the Democrats. Which brings us now to the next thing on the national front, and that is that Donald Trump has come out and said, and this is something that we've been working on here actually at the state level for a while. Donald Trump has come out and said that he is going to declare the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization. Now, technically, it already is because Hamas, which is the Palestinian arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, is a terrorist organization, but it has not been officially named. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, if you name the Muslim Brotherhood a terrorist organization, all of the other proxy organizations that were exposed in the Holy Land Foundation trial will have to be prosecuted. That means the prosecutions will pick up from where they left off in 2008 with all those unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial. Now, for those of you that have not heard it on this show before, those unindicted co-conspirators included several groups, all right, that most of you, one of them you probably have heard of, the other one you haven't. One is the Council of American Islamic Relations, and the other one is the North American Islamic Trust. The North American Islamic Trust owns many mosques in America, including the one in Spokane Valley. So in the Holy Land Foundation trial, you had a federal district court judge say, as a matter of fact and law, that the Council of American Islamic Relations and the North American Islamic Trust were members of the Muslim Brotherhood. Okay? Now, why is this important? Okay? Why is this important? Because they were named in that same list, you know, being members of the Muslim Brotherhood, as unindicted co-conspirators to funnel terror money into the United States of America as members of the U.S. Muslim Brotherhood. So that is important for a couple of reasons. First, they should have been prosecuted in 2008, but the Obama administration refused to do so. Even after the Holy Land Foundation trial was successful, the Obama administration refused to prosecute all of those unindicted co-conspirators. And second, because the Council of American Islamic Relations has cozied up to the left and many people in the left to such an extent that most of those people honestly probably wouldn't pass a background check because of their ties. That's why this is important, because you literally have a terrorist organization, if he so designates, that is infiltrated the highest levels of the administration in Washington, D.C. Now, this is fact. There is no, there's no dispute about what was found in the Holy Land Foundation trial by this federal district court judge. There is no dispute about the fact that Hamas is a terrorist organization and the Muslim Brotherhood has been fomenting terror around the world for decades. There's no dispute about that. There's no dispute about the explanatory memorandum that was found in a secret sub-basement during an FBI raid that listed all of these organizations as members of the Muslim Brotherhood in their own words. Okay? None of that is in dispute. So the only thing that's in dispute is why haven't they been rooted out of our government? And I'll leave that up to you to decide because of the Obama administration. But I do want to go to the next thing on the national front, and that's this. That Hussein Ailush, okay, called for an Arab Spring-like overthrow of the United States government. And what is he? Well, he's the head of the Council on American Islamic Relations in Los Angeles. And this was, what, 3 days ago? Now, Sean Hannity and a bunch of other guys have covered that. But the fact of the matter is that he called for the overthrow of the U.S. government. And I don't see him being prosecuted yet, but it's just going to back up what has already been found in court. So I would just, you know, I hope President-elect Trump on his first day in office designates them as a terrorist organization, because these guys need to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And it's also interesting that the left has apologized for these people for years, while at the same time demonizing farmers and ranchers who've tried to stand up for their rights in the West, and demonize them as terrorists, demonize veterans as terrorists. Remember I talked to you about that idea of projection? The left will project onto you how they really are. Here's a perfect, perfect example. Also on the national front, this is phenomenal, actually. So President-elect Trump has, I think, really taken a great step on the environmental issues. He is suggesting that he may put Myron Ebel, who has spent an entire career fighting climate alarmism, fighting against this so-called climate change, which has, I believe, been conclusively disproven. He wants to and has suggested that he might put him in charge of the EPA. I love that. Dismantle the EPA. And all the ridiculous things that have happened through that organization, that many of which are unconstitutional. Well, I'm going to look forward to some of these other nominations that he's going to put forward, but this is one great start. And with a Republican Senate and Congress, there shouldn't be any problem. Let's hope not among Republicans. Also on the national front. Now, this is what one friend of mine called national security malpractice. So there is a water treatment plant, okay, in Chicago. And there was a guy named Sharon Augustine who entered this water purification plant with a duffel bag containing a passport from Pakistan, okay? Now, this is being reported by CBS, all right? He was arrested and charged with trespassing and then released, at which time he promptly vanished. You heard that right. You had somebody go into a water treatment facility in Chicago with a duffel bag, passport from Pakistan, charged with trespassing and released, and then vanishes. That is called national security malpractice right there. I can't believe that is not made more news, but unbelievable it happened. I put it up on Facebook. You can take a look at the article for yourself. But this is the kind of thing that President-elect Trump no doubt will change based on the conversations I've already had with different people. Unbelievable we even have to talk about that. All right, next on the national front. The new head of the Democrat National Committee, I'm kind of stunned at this. This shows how tone deaf the Democrats are. He gets on TV and he says, not, hey, we really need to maybe reach out to a broader audience. Maybe we did turn some people off. When asked the question, what about rural voters voting for Trump? He said that didn't matter. And basically went on, I'm paraphrasing, basically went on to just say, who cares about rural America? Who cares about what they say? It's not about this. This is about hate. I mean, this is what these guys are implying, and the rest of the media is implying this as well. And I got to tell you something. He's a Muslim. And he's on TV, and he's a congressman, and he's saying this. And many people, rightfully so, reacted in a hugely negative way. And the Democrat National Committee wants to make this their chief spokesperson, who is completely tone deaf to the concerns of America. You know, when the Bundys were acquitted down in Oregon, that should have been a huge signal that, hey, we have had enough. All these rules and regulations that are trying to crush rural America, this war on rural America, we've had enough. But as you can see, the Democrat National Committee doesn't seem to care much. Which brings us to the regional front. Rioting in Portland, Oregon, kind of the center of the riots actually in the country, at least on the West Coast for sure. But the majority in Portland, there's an article out there about this, the majority of these rioters in Portland, well, they weren't registered and they didn't vote. I mean, and then in Seattle, there was an ad that was put up on Craigslist for full-time organizers, of course being paid $15 an hour because now the minimum wage has gone up. And then there are pictures in other parts of the country of buses that have brought all these so-called protesters in. Now, you remember years ago, the Democrats called us AstroTurf, that were part of the Tea Party movement. Remember that? That's projection again. Here you really have people that are being paid to agitate, bust in. They didn't even vote. And, of course, these are spontaneous uprisings of the people. Unreal. Also on the regional front, and this is an interesting story. It's kind of one of these the media doesn't report about, but it's really kind of cool. You had this politician in Oregon, okay? This is one of those things that really gets to the heart of the issues that we're facing today, and that's the right of conscience. These bakers, these were Christian bakers in Oregon. Many of you probably heard about them. These Christian bakers were put out of business by this lawmaker, Dennis Richardson. Okay, and then you have, now here's the interesting part. Now this lawmaker, who's respected lawmaker, was a candidate for Oregon governor, came back to defeat this guy named Brad Avakian. That's probably Avakian, but whatever. In the race for Secretary of State. Now Avakian was a state bureaucrat. He was the guy who went after the Christian bakers, sweet cakes, in 2013, and he lost that election for Secretary of State. So the guy that went after these bakers down in Oregon lost in a state that you would think, votes totally Democrat, but statewide he lost. And I've got to think that a lot of people said, you know something, you know, using your position to go after people for the right of conscience, maybe that could come back around to me, had a change of heart and voted him out of office. Kind of a good story and should be encouraging to everybody listening to the show. Also on the regional front and also encouraging, Jim Walsh, this is one of the races we had to win down in the 19th district for the House of Representatives in Washington State. Jim Walsh just yesterday pulled ahead, and it looks like he is going to win that race down in the 19th district. And that is a pickup for us. Now, in the 30th Legislative District, there are two races there. One we lost and the other is very close right now, too close to call. If we win that race, we are in a tie in Washington State. If we lose that race, we're going to be at 50-48 still. But it looks like that the Republicans have held on to the state Senate, and so that means, I believe, that we can block most of the gun control legislation should it come up from Attorney General Ferguson and some of these other anti-Christian pieces of legislation that he's at least talked about behind closed doors. He's the one that's prosecuting Baron L. Stutzman. Maybe we could have somebody run against him and take him out. We should have had somebody this time, 4 years now. But he continues down this road, maybe might be ripe for impeachment. Who knows? So that leaves us now with the local front. Once again, Mike Volz winning handily, Josh Kearns winning the commissioner race handily. Now, here in Spokane, we voted against minimum wage and many of these other things. And unfortunately, when the King County votes came in, it was a massive swing. It was almost illogical. Trump, it was funny, on election night, Trump was actually winning by 1 point at Washington State. But when King County came in, it went the other way. And so I want to just leave you today on the briefing thinking about this. What if we split the state of Washington? We're going to be introducing that bill, the State of Liberty. In fact, we had some wonderful, wonderful people send in a flag that I believe is the best one that we received for this potential state. But I have to ask the people in Seattle something. You guys hate us. You don't like us. We're a bunch of backward hillbillies over here in Spokane Valley. Why not just let us go? Let's split the state. I've had some people try to make an economic argument against that, and that just kind of falls flat on its face just by the sheer production of Eastern Washington, both in agriculture and manufacturing. But, you know, I just appeal maybe to the emotion of it, you know? I mean, if you guys really hate us that bad and you think you got to lord over us all, it's like, well, why don't you just let us go? You know, why don't you be your own separate, you know, progressive state? Wallow in your progressiveness while we wallow in the poverty of our wheat fields and our vineyards and our orchards and our forests and our mines and our manufacturing. And just want you to let us do that, because I think it would alleviate a lot of the tension that's out there right now. And it would be truly representative of where the state has gone. It really would. And that is the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. And I think that's what we were on Election Day. And please, if you get a chance, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US. Like the page, share it with your friends and family. We went over 2,000 likes. Thank you to everybody that was a part of that. And also, if you can find time, pray for us. A lot of people work on this show, and you know, it gets the message out of what's going on locally that you're not going to hear anywhere else. So really appreciate those prayers and covet those prayers. And thank you to everybody that was praying for me and my family in the election as well. That was very, very much appreciated. And if you want to support the show, you can always go to votesha.com. Well, it's my pleasure to introduce to you my guest, and hopefully we have her on right now from Israel. Cheryl Hancock, are you on?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
All right. Perfect. Well, thanks for joining me once again on Patriot Radio. Well, first of all, how are you doing over there? What's the situation on the ground? And then second, what was the reaction to the elections here in the United States?
Wow. Yeah, the election. This is a big deal over there in Israel. As a matter of fact, right now, I just landed in America just recently to have Thanksgiving dinner with my mom.
Oh, that's awesome.
I get a little break, but as I was leaving, everyone was elated. Well, the Israelis were elated that Trump won, which is very interesting. I asked them why they were for Trump, and they said because they didn't like the Obama administration, the way they were pushing Israel into not building in the areas where they have in Judea and Samaria, and they were pushing other agendas onto Israel. And Netanyahu actually got in trouble with his government because he was so diplomatic and he listened to America in certain areas. So they believe that the Trump administration may understand Israel a little bit better, understand what's going on around them, and be different, and allow the Jews to build. One problem we have over there is that the cost of living is so high, gas is up to $9 a gallon about. And to live over in Israel is very difficult to find an apartment. I rent, and the rent is very high. It took me about 3 years to find an apartment to rent when I wanted to move, because there aren't enough apartments. So the rent is high. The young people, they get married, and they have no place to live. So in the areas outside of Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, which are called the West Bank also, there's a settlement there. They call it settlements. It's a community, a Jewish community of 50,000 Jewish people. And there's people getting married all the time and want to have their own place. So you have to build on. You have to build apartment buildings for people to live in. They don't even have houses. They buy flats, apartments, because there's not enough room to everyone have a house. So it's a real problem over there to find a place. And it's hard for Israel not to build when you have all these people, immigrants, coming in, making aliyah, immigration to Israel. Where do you put them? So we're hoping that with Trump in, maybe things will change. Maybe he'll see what's going on. But there's got to be some changes. It's very tense in Israel right now.
Wow. First of all, I'm really surprised at how quiet it suddenly got on the international stage, it seems like. I think they're just kind of waiting to see what Donald Trump does. How do you think this is going to impact not just Israel, but also how do you think this is going to impact the situation in Syria? I mean, what is the kind of scuttlebutt over there about how Trump is going to impact those specific things and maybe bring a little bit more peace to the Middle East?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of talk. I talked to some Muslim friends of mine who are Palestinians. And it was before the election I talked to them, and they told me they did not want Trump to win. They wanted Hillary to win. So it was a very interesting situation. And I asked them why also, and they said because he's a wild card. They don't know what he's going to do. They don't believe they'll be able to even have a chance to immigrate to the West. A lot of Palestinians want out of the Palestinian territory. They don't have jobs there for the people, so they want to come and have a life somewhere else. And so they really believe that Trump is going to make a difference in the Middle East that they may not like. As far as Syria, we know that there is problems over there. The United States is poking at Russia, which can be very dangerous. Russia is very strong right now. They have 400 more nuclear weapons than America does. Russia has more weapons. And so they're afraid that Russia is helping the Shiite country now. They're helping Assad with Syria. They're helping Iran, and Iran's also fighting in Syria with Russia. So the Shiite countries are really gaining power when the Sunnis, which is 85% of the Muslims, they're Sunnis, and they had control all these years. Saudi Arabia doesn't like what's going on. Russia's in there helping, and they're getting stronger, while the Sunnis are lessening in power. And America was on the side of the Sunnis, was helping with the rebels, giving them weapons, training them. And Russia is helping Assad kill them. So it's a very interesting situation over there. We're hoping that Trump gets and understands what's going on, because I believe that if people don't understand what's going on, you can cause a lot of problems in the Middle East. But if you understand, things can change. So when the debate was going on, the last debate between Clinton and Trump, Clinton said that there was a question asked, and she said what she would do in Syria is to cause a no-fly zone over Syria. And the commentator said, or the person giving the debate said, well, what happens if Russia breaks that no-fly zone? And Clinton never answered the question, because if she did anything about breaking that fly zone, and what else can you do besides attack Russia, and then there would be a war. So it's a very sensitive situation over there. And Trump is invited to the White House now. Netanyahu is invited to the White House. One of the first things that Trump did was call Israel, call Netanyahu, and invite him to the White House, because Netanyahu is a key. Israel's a key into what's going on over there. So between the two, we're hoping that they'll find a way to resolve what's going on and America's role in what's going on. Israel's staying out of it as much as possible. But this last week, at least 8 mortars were fired into Israel on the Golan Heights, and Israel fired back. So it's a very fragile situation. So no one knows what Trump's going to do, but they're hoping that he knows what's going on in the Middle East and learn and have good advisors around him.
So the mortars that were fired in regards to the Golan Heights, who fired those? Do you know? Is that, did they figure out? I mean, was that one rebel faction? Was that Syrian army? I mean, who fired those?
They believed it was a Syrian army that fired them. Wow. I don't know if they ever figured it out completely. What they did is fired back. Wherever they see something fired from, they fire back. And Israel already talked with Putin a while back, months ago, when Russia was getting stronger over there helping Assad. And they made an agreement. Russia would not fly over Israel, would not let the war spread into Israel. And Israel was going to stay out of it and not be a part of it. So they have a good agreement. But Israel also said, if anything spills over, we are going to fire back. Because you don't know, really, Syria always wanted to take over the Golan Heights. And you don't know what's going on in that end. They really believe it was stray rockets, but they don't even want them to get that close. There's lots of people that live on the Golan Heights, and thank God these mortars didn't land in areas that were populated. We also have the Iron Dome over there. The Iron Dome, when a rocket comes, it will stop it. And sometimes it works, and sometimes too many rockets are fired at one time. So there is protection on the Golan Heights, but Israel's on high alert because they don't want it to spill over. On the other hand, Israel is letting some Syrians come in that are wounded, especially the children, and they have a hospital, a makeshift hospital up there, a tent hospital, and then they bring them in, if they have to, into Israel's hospitals, and they fix those kids up, they fix the people up, and then send them back to Syria. So Israel's doing that part to help.
So as far as the situation maybe spilling over into Israel, sounds like it's so far fairly contained. What about the situation with Iran? How do they view, a Trump administration checking the Iranians in that threat? I mean, because that's a little farther away, but probably a little bit more severe than the Syrian threat. What was the normal person on the streets view of this whole thing, this election, in that perspective?
Well, Iran is wondering what Trump will do with the deal that Obama made. Obama said already that he was going to change that deal, do something. And so Iran knows that something is going to happen where Iran is continuing to build and to prepare their weapons. And they keep chanting their chants, death to Israel, death to America. And they really are a point where you can't just ignore that. So I think Trump is not going to ignore it. And their fear is that Trump will try to get involved and stop the deal that Obama made. So that's what we're hearing on the streets. And people are hoping that Trump does something because Israel is very close to these countries in the Middle East. As I said last time on the show, that we're actually 60 kilometers away from Damascus, Syria. So, and Iran's not much farther away. So Israel needs America to do something to help protect Israel, not make deals that will put Israel in danger, which this deal that Obama made is. Even if they don't build a nuclear weapon for 10 years, what happens after 10 years? They're not going to stop doing what they're doing. And then they're even saying what they're going to do. So we need to be listening to what they're saying because they mean it. So I hope Trump will listen, and that's what people in the Middle East are talking about. That's what the Jewish people are talking about. They want the protection, and, of course, Israel is building right now to protect themselves. They have to.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit away from that and toward, something I heard quite a bit about, and that was, prophecies over this election that, this was a very God-directed election. And I heard people actually, I heard one person who is actually visiting Israel, actually broadcasting from Israel, his thoughts on this election and God's hand in this election. What did you hear on the ground over there about people's thoughts about God's hand in the U.S. election?
Yeah, there was a rabbi who predicted Trump would win, especially after he said something about moving the embassy, the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which is Israel's capital. And he said that he was chosen by God to be a leader at this time because of the changes that are going to come about. He believed it was for the messianic period that Trump had been called into service of the presidency of the United States. So this was actually in the news even today or yesterday. But there was a lot of talk on the ground that Trump is the guy that's been called for such a time as this, because a lot of things are happening right now. And it's a very volatile time that we live in, time of changes, all kinds. Well, as a matter of fact, I wanted to bring this up, but the United Nations is changing Jerusalem drastically. They're taking the Temple Mount and they're calling it a Muslim site, the Temple Mount and the Western Wall. The Temple Mount has now been renamed as the Al-Aqsa Compound, and the Western Wall has been renamed Al-Barak Plaza. They said, the United Nations, UNESCO, said that these are Muslim holy sites, not Jewish holy sites. And so what they're doing is changing the narrative. They're delegitimizing Israel, and they're saying Israel has no connection, historical connection to Jerusalem, because the Palestinian Authority wants this Jerusalem for their capital, and they're working hard to destroy Israel and delegitimize Israel. Another thing that the Palestinians came up with this week was that the Dead Sea Scrolls belong to the Palestinian people, not to the Jewish people. Very interesting, because the Dead Sea Scrolls are written in biblical Hebrew. So these are things that are happening to discredit Israel, to take Israel away from the Israeli people, from the Jewish people, and it's what's going on today. So there's going to be all this uprising about the Temple Mount. So you want to talk about the prophecy, the Sanhedrin, which was just appointed just a few years ago, and this is the first time in 2,000 years that there has been a Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin went to Putin and to Trump because they want the third temple to be built now. And they think between Putin and Trump and Netanyahu that it can be built. So that's just new. That's new news that just came out. Very interesting. Wow. Also, the Jews, they elected a high priest, which we haven't had for 2,000 years, a real high priest in Jerusalem. And this is really an important time for the Jewish people. They're finding that most Jews want to go up to the Temple Mount and pray, whereas before they didn't want to go up to the Temple Mount and pray. But it's becoming more and more important to them. And so it shows the signs of the times, is what the rabbis are saying, that it's time for the Jewish people to have their temple back on the Temple Mount. So it's a very interesting time, prophetically speaking. So we're hearing a lot of stuff over there.
Wow. I want to talk. I mean, there's a couple that are fascinating to me. But I knew about the Sanhedrin. I think most of the listeners to Patriot Radio knew about the Sanhedrin, but they actually elected a high priest. So how did the Jewish people take that? I mean, because I know it's a fairly secular society. How do they take something like that? Is just kind of, whatever, or is this taken very seriously?
Well, actually, some had taken it very seriously. As a matter of fact, on the day that they elected the high priest, or the rabbis that appointed him, they had a sacrifice in the old city of Jerusalem in the Jewish quarter. They didn't sacrifice flesh, but they sacrificed some kind of, I don't know if it was vegetable, I don't know what it was that they sacrificed, but they had a sacrifice out there. So the secular people, a lot of Jews are secular, unfortunately, and they just don't think much about it at all. But when you talk to Orthodox or ultra-Orthodox Jews, they're excited. They see there's a change in Israel and a change in what's happening with the Jewish people themselves. I talk to Jewish people all the time. I mean, I have a lot of friends from secular all the way to ultra-Orthodox. And we can sit down and we can talk about the Bible and the prophecies. We can put out the newspaper and talk about what's happening and put out the Bible. And it just is exciting. Until we get to the Jesus part or Yeshua part. And so we believe, of course, Yeshua is coming back, and they believe that he is coming. And it opens up for a great discussion. But anyways, the people do believe in the prophecies. They see a movement now. More Jews want to go to the Temple Mount, and now the UN and the Palestinians, the Arab world, wants to take that Temple Mount and the Western Wall away from the Jewish people. People are believing it. People are believing that the Jews have no ties to the Western Wall. There are Christian groups that believe that also. But But, you know, when you start believing stuff like there was no temple, there was no King David, which is what they're saying, then you're tearing up our Bible. Because in our Bible, it talks about the temples. It talks about Jesus went to the temple. And it talks about King David. And Jesus is the line of King David. You know, he's in the line. So if you take away all those things, they're taking away our Bible. They're discrediting the Bible. And faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. And it really messes up with our faith. Because people, if they believe there was no temple and they keep pushing this, then when you walk into a church and you say, you hear a pastor talking about the Bible and talking about the temple, what are the people going to think that don't believe in a temple? They're going to think it's a bunch of nonsense and walk out. But it's a problem. They're messing with the Bible. They're messing with our faith. And, of course, with the Lord. Our faith in the Lord. So it's a very interesting thing going on over there in Israel. On the ground, it's very frightful because they want to take these things out of the hands of the Jewish people. It's not just the Temple Mount, the Western Wall, but other Jewish sites. They even say that Jesus was a Palestinian. And so there are crazy things said, and people are falling for it. So it's like we live in the days of deception right now, and the people are just falling for it. It's unbelievable what's happening in Israel that people don't know. So we need to listen to what's happening because it will affect us as a people in America and also as Christians. And we need to stand up for the truth, which is the Bible and which is our Lord, the Lord Jesus Christ. So these are things going on, and these are things I write about in my update because people need to know. And I thank you for allowing me to have me on the radio so I can tell people about these things. It's important.
Absolutely. Now, a couple of years ago, there was kind of a public push to make Jerusalem like an international city, that, you know, kind of take it out of, you know, Israel's hands, take it out of the Palestinians' hands, just say this is just an international city to be administered by the UN. Are they still pushing that, or is this kind of the
Absolutely.
Piecemeal approach they're taking? Okay.
No, they really are pushing that. As a matter of fact, when Israel took over the old city in 67, they gave the walks that was running the Temple Mount from Jordan, they gave them the guardianship over the Temple Mount, which was a very big mistake, and Jews know it now, because now they can't get it back. They do have sovereignty over it, but they allowed that guardianship to be given to the Muslims. And now only Muslim prayers are allowed on the Temple Mount. You can't take a Bible on the Temple Mount. Christians aren't even allowed to pray on the Temple Mount. But lately, the Jews went up there and they started praying. And this was beginning in Sukkot during the Feast of Tabernacles. They went up there in the hundreds, up to the thousands of people going up to the Western Wall, or excuse me, the Temple Mount and praying. But you're right. As far as it being an international city, it kind of is right now. What the UN's doing is trying to make it not Jewish by taking away the Western Wall, the Temple Mount. And when you're born in Jerusalem, it will say on your birth certificate, if you're American, you have dual citizen, it'll say that you're born in Jerusalem. It won't have a country. And most, you know, birth certificates have the city and the country you're born in, but they won't recognize Israel as, or excuse me, Jerusalem as being part of Israel. And it's a problem. So when Trump said he was going to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, it causes a lot of controversy. All the foreign embassies are in Tel Aviv right now. But the capital of Israel is not Tel Aviv, it's Jerusalem. So they're wanting the embassies, to be moved to Jerusalem. If he does that, it's going to go against everything that the international community is wanting right now, and the United Nations. So it's going to cause a big mess. So they do want to make it international, especially the old city international. And then I heard that the Pope was talking one time, had a meeting, and they talked about having it be international worship so that there can be a mosque, which is already on the Temple Mount, a church, so the Christians can go up and worship, and a temple on the Temple Mount, which I don't know how that would ever work because there would be a lot of fighting. But yes, right now they're talking about it being international, not part of Israel.
Well, if you could tell the listeners a little bit about your newsletter, how they can contact you to get on your list, and, you know, where they can go to get more information.
Yeah, sure. What I do is I send a newsletter out about twice a month, and I try to keep it short, just little paragraphs of the news. And you can reach me, just email me, and the address is very simple, all one word, reportingfromisrael@gmail.com. It's reportingfromisrael, all one word, @gmail.com. And then I can send those updates, add the person to the list, and then they would also get some news what's happening over there in Israel. Very important to keep on top of it because things change there all the time. You know, there were letters. I just have to tell you, this is a great story. There were letters sent from all over the world to God. And where do they put the letters? They're just sent to God, addressed to God. They send the letters to Israel. And then Israel takes those letters and their prayers inside the envelopes, and they put them in the cracks of the walls of the Western Wall. They do that for the people from around the world, and they get thousands of letters every year. I just learned about this a few months ago, and I thought it was a great story that it would go to Israel, letters written to God. But then they don't take those letters, those prayers that you put in the wall, they don't just throw them away at the end of the year. What they do is the priests go during Passover, right before Passover starts, and the rabbis go, and they take all those prayers and they bury them on the Mount of Olives because they're very special. So it's an interesting story.
Boy, that is an interesting story. I want to end the show. We've only got a couple minutes left. You know, there are a lot of young people out there that have gone to university and they've frankly been brainwashed in regards to the whole Palestinian claim to the land and all of this, and that the Israelis are terrible to them and treat them horribly. What is your message to young people about why the history and the knowledge of the current events in that area of the world is so important?
Well, because there is a lot of problems coming out of there. When you live there, I've lived there over 17 years. I didn't know what to think when I lived, you know, when I first moved over there, but I saw things firsthand. I began working with Arabs because I found that they're poor, they need help. They were just in front of me, and the Lord put on my heart to help anyone that's in front of me. So I would give food and clothing. I would go to their villages, and I would learn straight from them what's really going on the ground. And I lived among the Jewish people, and I learned from them what's going on the ground. What's being said at the universities, what kids are being taught, and what they're doing is completely wrong. If you don't know what's going on and you're just getting the information from somebody else, you need to look into it and be wise, because people are going to deceive you. People are trying to tell you how to think, and you need to check it out for yourself. I once was at a lecture in England, and these people were Jews for Palestinian rights, and they began talking about how the Palestinians needed help and the bully Jews, and they were Jews themselves. The Israelis were, you know, doing really bad things to them. And at the end of the lecture, I asked, have you ever been to Israel? And they said, no. And so yet they're talking against Israel, but they've never been there. It's not true that that the Israelis are bullying and killing babies. We've heard that one before. They don't do that. And there's so many lies coming out that you can't stop all these lies. The power of the tongue, it's really strong. And once a lie is put out there, people believe it, and it's hard to change their minds unless they see truth. So what I do in my newsletter is I write the truth. And I know they have in universities, they have mock-ups of the checkpoints. I have to drive through a checkpoint every time I go home because I live in the West Bank. So I live in a Jewish area of the West Bank. I go through the checkpoint, and they look in the car and make sure no one's in there that might be a terrorist. And if they feel strange, they will search your car, make sure there's no bombs there. I've been searched many times. They're looking out for the safety of people. But when you go to the universities, and once a year they have these mock-ups of the checkpoint, and they have Israelis, IDF, stepping on the Arab people and spitting on them and killing them, and that's not what happens. It's not what happens at all. It's completely opposite over there. The Palestinian people have been told to take up their knives and take up their weapons and go kill Israelis. And what we have to do is watch our back. I carry pepper spray just to protect myself, because you don't know if an 11-year-old girl is going to have a knife or scissors from school, which has happened, and just start stabbing people downtown, or a 90-year-old grandmother will run over people waiting at a bus stop. These things have happened in Israel. So you have to really search the truth. Find out what the truth is. Be as the Bereans. Find out for yourself what the truth is. Don't listen to the world and the lies that are going on. This is why I do speaking tours in America. I come here to tell the truth about what's happening. So it's difficult trying to talk to people.
Well, like I said before, we'd love to have you up here in the Spokane area. I'm sure you would have a tremendous turnout. Next time you're on a tour here, please let's stay in touch so we can make that happen. I'd love to have you on the show again, you know, as we get into the new year and things heat up a little bit over there as the Trump administration takes over. Really appreciate everything you're doing, Cheryl. God bless you, and you know, we're going to be praying for you, and I hope you have a great Thanksgiving back here in the United States.
Yeah, and thank you so much. I will be heading back to Israel after Thanksgiving, and I'd be happy to talk to you again from Israel. And yes, hopefully I'll see you in Spokane soon.
All right, I look forward to it. Cheryl Hancock reporting from Israel, but coming back to the United States for Thanksgiving. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. Now, to all the listeners out there, I do want to say, this disinformation and the lying and all this stuff that's happening, it is systematic and it is intentional. And it's the same old enemy that does that in the spiritual realm. In the physical realm, it's the same old enemy too. And that's the former Soviet Union and the KGB. That is who infiltrated many, many areas in the Middle East. And you have a book written on this, Disinformation, by General Mihai Pachipa, that talks about this issue. And that is where a lot of this disinformation comes from, and it's constantly ginned up. There's a lot of confusion out there, and that's why it is always best to go to the primary source, go to eyewitnesses on the ground, and get your information. Don't just parrot it from the media, because honestly, the mainstream media, as we saw this entire election cycle, is not in the business of necessarily telling you the truth. This is Matt Shea. Thank you once again for joining me on Patriot Radio today. May God bless all of you. And if you get the chance, pray for this too, that he would make this generation the greatest one.